Good morning. Good morning. How are you? Hope you're well. It's Sunday morning, the 30th. Easy for me to say, the 30th of July 2017. It's 11 a.m. exactly as I talk to you now. Nice morning here in South Manchester. As usual, I hope you've had a nice weekend. You've relaxed, you've chilled out. This is Sunday View. We're live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, and TuneIn Radio. Lots to tell you about today, but I'm going to focus on one thing particularly, and I hope you'll stay with me for this. Let's get on with it. Sunday View, welcome to it.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
Yes, indeed. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter, by the way, and it's richie@richieallen.co.uk. That's the email address if you'd like to get in touch with me this Sunday to tell me what you're thinking. As usual, I'll be genuinely thrilled to hear from you. So email me or tweet me now.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England, this is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com.
There's nothing like it. Nothing like Sunday View. Ordinarily, taking a look at the front pages of the broadsheet newspapers and the tabloids as well. Not so much of that today, because I want to focus on one thing, but we will look at the papers and the headlines as well. Do bookmark davidicke.com/headlines. A lot of what I talk about on this program, most of what I talk about, is covered in depth at davidicke.com/headlines. Bookmark it now. And good evening, good evening, good evening. Well, it might be good evening if you're listening in Australia or New Zealand, but I should say good morning to listeners listening and tuning in via Fab Radio 2 at fabradiointernational.com. Let's get the music. Let's turn it off and just get on with it. All the drama. We invest a lot of time, don't we, in programmes with dramatic music and all of that. Maybe we shouldn't spend so much time on that sort of stuff. Maybe we should. Before we go any further, I met a lovely man called Mark Atwood on Friday. Now, I've known Mark only through social media for a couple of years. I met him first in London in 2014 when David was at Wembley for the second time. Wonderful day that. Bumped into Mark then, and he's been a big champion of the social media in the time I've known him, and he's been a big champion of this programme as well. He was with his son Joe, and I met him for a brief, sadly brief, couple of hours on Friday for a bit of lunch. Lovely, lovely people. Massive thanks, by the way, to Katie, Mark's better half, for the lovely presents from Morocco. The future Mrs. Allen was delighted and will be in touch, and I'll be in touch as well. So big thanks, and loved meeting Mark, who was off to Scotland, if memory serves me, on Saturday, and is going to be in the UK for a while before going back to Morocco. Lovely man. Thank you, Mark. Now, 3 minutes past 11. Hello. A few tweets coming in. Good to know that you're with me today. Now, voting is taking place in Venezuela today to elect a new assembly with powers to rewrite the constitution. This is proving controversial. And most of the radio and television news programmes this Sunday are leading with the story. The opposition is boycotting the vote. It says it's boycotting the vote because it's a power grab by President Nicolas Maduro. That's what they're saying. The government says the Constituent Assembly is the only way to bring peace back to the country after several months of violent protests. Now, I'm reading from the BBC and from Reuters as well. This is what they're saying. On the eve of the vote, so yesterday, protesters blocked roads in the capital, Caracas, in defiance of a ban on demonstrations. Now, in a speech broadcast on television, President Maduro predicted a big victory, saying the vote was, quote, the most important election held in Venezuela's political system, end quote. The BBC writes, oil-rich Venezuela is gripped by a political crisis with soaring inflation and daily food shortages. Violent demonstrations since April have left more than 100 people dead. Many residents in Caracas were stocking up on essential items on Saturday in case unrest left shops closed into Monday, into tomorrow. That was the BBC there. The opposition. Well, the opposition to the government are saying they will continue this campaign until Maduro is out. And they're asking people to go out on the streets today, despite the ban on protests by Maduro and by his government. What's going on today? Well, 6,000 candidates, in fact more than 6,000, are standing for the 545-member Constituent Assembly. None of the candidates are from the opposition. Now, the new body, after today, will have the power to bypass the National Assembly, which is currently controlled by an alliance of opposition parties. You get what's going on here, right? Okay. Now, I'll tell you more on who these opposition parties are in a minute. Tell you more about them, who the opposition is, and what they're motivated by. Now, Colombia has said it will not recognise the Constituent Assembly. France, Spain, the US and the EU have also urged Maduro to cancel the vote. I want you to listen to Brooke Unger. He's a senior editor with The Economist magazine. He was on Sky News this morning, and I want you to listen to the propaganda. Listen to what Brooke Unger from The Economist said is going on in Venezuela.
It's a very volatile situation because, you know, this is taking place against the backdrop of an incredibly severe economic and really humanitarian crisis where, you know, things have got to the point where there isn't enough food, there are no medicines, The population has lost an average of something like 9 kilos of weight over the past year. I mean, it's a very, very severe crisis. And the regime is basically running out of money. So, you know, on the one hand, you have a regime that's determined to kind of solidify its place in power. But on the other hand, the economic support for that just isn't there. And there have been protests now for the past more than 100 days because people are fed up both with the sort of increasingly dictatorial nature of the regime and with their barely bearable living standards.
Given the country's oil wealth and the oil reserves that are there, why is there this economic crisis?
Well, I mean, it's a combination of two things. I mean, one is, oil prices have been very weak. I mean, they've halved pretty much since 2014. And Venezuela is 98% of its exports are oil. So, you know, it basically has nothing else. But the other thing is that the regime has an economically illiterate, economically destructive ideology that makes it virtually impossible for markets to function properly, for prices to function properly, and for production to occur. And so, that leads to the shortages and it's a combination. The drop in oil prices really has revealed just how nutty this government's economic policy is.
Brooke Unger from The Economist, thanks very much
Brooke
for
Unger,
sharing.
Brooke Unger from The Economist, thank you very much for sharing your expertise, she said. Now that's pretty much bollocks from Brooke Unger. And the dollies on Sky, the good-looking, immaculately dressed dollies who present the shows, they're pretty useless, really. There is another side to every story. It's their duty to say to Brooke Unger that Nicolas Maduro claims that he's been sabotaged by dark actors representing the US and the IMF. But no, they won't do that. Now, I've scoured the media to find any example of where mainstream cable news has interviewed credible commentators to put the pro-Venezuelan government case. Now, I don't mean historically, I mean since April. So I've trawled the archives and I've got extensive access to various news organizations, to various bureaus. I've got it all here. There isn't one. Not a single network. Sky News, CNN, C-SPAN, AFP, the French national news channels, the Italians. I could be here all day. Nobody has attempted to provide any balance on this. It's laughable. It's properly laughable. Now, Fox News has run daily interviews with US congressmen and congressmen and congresswomen demanding sanctions on Venezuela. Okay, and we'll hear from one in a minute. The only time they attempted to provide balance, wait for this, was when they brought on a young man from a college, from a junior college. I shit you not. The kid's name was Dakota Lilly. Now, I'm not knocking Dakota Lilly. He seems like a bright lad and a good lad, and experience will be of great benefit to him. He's from the group called Students and Youth for a New America, and he was interviewed by Fox News Tucker Carlson back in May, the only time a pro-Venezuelan government commentator was allowed on a show. Listen to how it went. You will hear the host first, and the host, as I said, is Tucker Carlson himself.
So do you see a pattern here? I mean, it's not just Venezuela, but it's also, I don't know, 1970s Bulgaria and Romania and Albania and the Soviet Union and Cuba and North Korea, and every country that has tried this economic system winds up in poverty. So do you see a connection between all of these cases?
Well, Tucker, what I think is extremely important is we need to acknowledge that what Venezuela is currently facing right now is terrorism at the hands of the opposition. The opposition has bombed schools, they've bombed buses, they've taken wiring and strung it across roads to behead cops on motorcycles. These aren't choir boys, these are violent extremists hell-bent on taking away the progress Venezuela has made over the past few years.
So who's got the guns in Venezuela? Private gun ownership is obviously illegal in Venezuela, and so the overwhelming majority of firearms are in the hands of the government. So how can the opposition to the government be the ones perpetrating the violence?
Well, Tucker, if you look at the casualties that have happened in the past few months in these protests, the majority of those that have been killed have been trade unionist leaders, have been dedicated chavistas, have been people on the left. So obviously the ones that are being targeted are those that support the government.
Dakota, I don't want to rock your world, but I think reliable statistics probably pretty hard to come by under the Maduro government, I would say, which controls, of course, all the statistics coming out of Venezuela. But the bottom line is the country has had a socialist government for over 10 years. It's become poorer every year, despite having the world's largest oil reserves. Does that give you any cause to stop for a second and say, you know, maybe this whole socialism thing doesn't work that well? It's never worked anywhere. It's not working again. Maybe there's a lesson for me as a young American, no?
Now, up to this point, the kid is doing okay. The opposition, controlled by the US, are committing violence. They're terrorists. But here's where inexperience kills him. Carlson just said there, socialism in Venezuela over the last 10 years, the country has gotten poorer every year. Now, the kid could have annihilated him there, but didn't, because of his inexperience. And this is the reason the kid was asked to come on the program. A kid from a college in America who'd never been on television before is asked to come on and put the case forward for the socialist government of Venezuela under Nicolas Maduro. This is incredible. This is incredible. I don't think there is a word to describe what Sky or what Fox News did by inviting the kid on, and not by inviting a credible spokesperson on. So this is how it went after that.
Well, Tucker, everyone in Venezuela, including the president, Nicolas Maduro, acknowledges that reforms are needed in things like food distribution and elsewhere. But very few, if anyone, in Venezuela want to go back to the pre-Chavez years of unbridled capitalism. So much so that the leader of the opposition, Enrique Capriles, calls himself a socialist.
Presumably he means something different by that. Is your Spanish pretty good? I mean, do you have a pretty good handle on popular opinion in Venezuela? How would you know what the majority of people in Venezuela want?
Well, I mean, all you have to do is look at the astounding amount of elections that have been held over the past few years, ever since the early 2000s when Chavez came in. People have come out time and time again to vote for the United Socialist Party, to vote for constitutional referendums, and to vote for Hugo Chavez and Nicolas Maduro in elections that have been certified by international observers like the Carter Center.
So you really think that the government of Venezuela is on the level, that it is a purely democratic government, that it's basically successful economically? How can you think that? I mean, have you spent a lot of time there? Have you talked to a lot of people about it? I mean, like, what gives you that idea?
Well, Tucker, if you look at the international observers that have certified these elections, I mean, what stake does Jimmy Carter and the Carter Center have in defining fraudulent elections as democratic?
Now, the kid got mired in arguing over the legitimacy of recent Venezuelan elections. He could have spoken at length about what Hugo Chavez's government did, which I'm going to come to in great detail in a few minutes. He could have pointed to the enormous success of the Chavez government from 2002 to 2009, even before that. But it's a joke. Nice kid, well-meaning, bright, but nervous as hell, and totally inexperienced, painted as a nutty socialist by the host. 24/7 propaganda, that's what we've been seeing. Now, last week, Congresswoman Leanna Ross-Lehtinen, that's her name, Leanna Ross-Lehtinen, she's been advocating more economic sanctions on Venezuela, and she has been given pretty much unfettered access to major cable news channels in America. She's been everywhere. This is what she's been saying. Listen to the madness of this.
Venezuela, you've got to remember, all of you viewers, was one of the richest, most productive, most powerful countries, freest countries in all of Latin America. It was the breadbasket for Latin America. Now they don't even have wheat, they don't have milk, they don't have diapers, they don't have medicine. It's a basket case. So it went from a breadbasket to a basket case. Why? Because socialism and communism does not work. And so the people are saying what is ahead for us, and that's why I respect what they're doing. They're demonstrating peacefully in the streets, but they're also going to the ballot boxes and they're saying yes. So they're doing everything. Now it's up to us in the United States to sanction those human rights abusers in Venezuela and say, I know you like to come to Disney World and visit Mickey Mouse. Well, guess what? If you trample on people's human rights, you're not going to be able to come to the U.S. We're going to freeze your bank accounts. We're going to confiscate your luxury condos and your yachts, and you decide, treat the people with respect or you will not be able to come to the United States. Venezuelan human rights activists, they understand that these thugs love to come to the land of milk and honey, the United States. Let's not give them that privilege.
Let's not give them the privilege. These thugs love to come to the land of milk and honey, the United States. I'll come back to that in a minute. The breadbasket. As I'll explain in a minute, using facts, and I'm going to use the truth, I've never hidden away from what it is I do on this program, on programs like this anyway. I express my opinion. When I'm expressing something that is an opinion and it's conjecture, I'll always tell you, I say, look, this is what I've come to understand. I'm going to be talking facts in a minute. I'm going to be talking about the pre-Chavez attempted coup in 92 when he attempted to overthrow the government, and I'll be telling you all about that. The country was on its arse, and I'll tell you why, all on this particularly different edition of Sunday View. It's a bit different today. I will come to some of the papers later, but I want to stick with this because I think it's vitally important today. So what's going on in Venezuela then? This amazing country. I never got to visit it. I was in Costa Rica for a time. Central America, of course. I'd have loved to have travelled further south and seen some of these amazing countries, but I didn't get to do that. Please God, in the future. What's going on in Venezuela? What is the truth about it? Well, there's no doubt the country is in a bit of a, it's in a bit of a maelstrom at the moment. There is a horrendous economic crisis there right now, even though it is oil rich. Now, you heard Brooke Unger's lies earlier on, and you heard Leanna Ross-Lehtinen a couple of minutes ago about the why they say an oil-rich country like Venezuela is in the mess that it's in now. I'm going to tell you why it's really in the mess that it's in now. It is oil-rich. Oil makes up 95% of its total exports. I think Brooke Unger from The Economist told Sky News that it's about 98%. Well, we're not going to haggle. 95%, 98%, whichever it is, their entire economy is dependent on oil. So how can a country that's drowning in oil, right? I mean, it's drowning in oil. How can it see riots over food shortages? How could that happen? How could it have a lack of medicine? How could there be rubbish mountains in suburbs of not just Caracas, but elsewhere in the country? How could there be empty supermarkets? How could all of that happen to a country as mineral rich as Venezuela? The government must be tyrannical, right? He must be a dictator, right? He's a despot, right? I mean, if you listen to BBC, CNN, Sky, MSNBC, that's the reason. That's the reason. Marxism is a failure. Nicolas Maduro is destroying his country. It's all his fault. And of course, if you're listening to the news today, and I know you probably will be, you will hear a lot today on Radio Telefiche Éireann in Ireland, on Ulster Television in the north of Ireland, on BBC and Sky Today, you will be told by a bevy of economic experts from the London School of Economics to, well, to all of these schools, you will be told that free market economies are superior and they don't allow for this. Now, this is laughable, right? You almost want to fall around on the ground kicking your legs in the air when a US puppet from the London School of Economics on Sky News tells one of their bevy of beauties, one of their supermodel presenters, that the maniacal socialism of the Bolivarian regime, as they call it, on the massive problems in Venezuela. Blame it on the Bolivarian regime and socialism. The free market, they say. If there was a free market there, we wouldn't have had any of this. Let's have a look at the free market very briefly in America. 58,000 homeless people in Los Angeles. One in four children in the United States goes to bed hungry every night too. That's a fact as well, by the way. That's a real fact. One in four children goes to bed hungry or having missed one of the three squares. That's the truth, right? Who's going to challenge these guys? Which of these bevy of beauties, these supermodels, Isabel Webster, Stephen Dixon, which of them is going to say, listen, Mr. Unger, you're having a laugh, aren't you, about the free market economy? No, they don't do it. Hugo Chavez, the nemesis of several recent US presidents until he died of cancer a couple of years ago, he started what we know today as the Bolivarian Revolution. Do you know anything about that? I'm guessing the majority of our listeners won't. And it's not because you're stupid. Far from it. It's because nobody talks about it. What is the Bolivarian or the Bolivarian Revolution? What is it? Well, it's named after Simon Bolivar. Now, he was a 19th century Venezuelan revolutionary leader, and he played a massive, massive part in liberating much of South America from Spanish rule. Huge hero of Marxists, of socialists. What did Chavez do? Now, I'm assuming that you know the basics about Chavez. If not, we'll give you the Cliff Notes version in a minute. But during Chavez's time as president of Venezuela, he used the money from the sale of oil to fund what he called Bolivarian missions. What were they? Well, it was the government using the revenue from the sale of oil to put in anti-poverty initiatives, building thousands of free medical clinics for the poor, promoting indigenous rights, building schools, putting educational campaigns in place, and giving food and housing subsidies to the poorest people in Venezuela. The opposite of austerity. Now, I want you to think about that. I want you to keep that in your mind. He inherited the country. And again, look, before we continue with this, I'm assuming you know the Chavez story. You know, from his time in the army, his attempted coup. He attempted to overthrow the government in 1992. He failed. He was chucked in jail, of course. Spent a couple of years in jail. They probably should have executed him. They probably wish they did. When he came out, he entered politics. You know all about this, right? The coup attempt. Why? As a senior member of the military, did he try to throw out the Carlos Andres Perez government? Why did he try to do that? Well, and I don't write any of this down, I've just got key bullet points. I want to explain this in a way that I don't give you any incorrect information. Carlos Andres Perez, at the beginning of his second term as president, 88-89, he basically handed Venezuela over to the International Monetary Fund. How did he do that? Well, he accepted something called the Washington Consensus, which was a proposal which gave Venezuela a loan of $4.5 billion. It didn't need the money because it was oil rich. But because of corruption, collusion with puppets of the US government, the country had basically been sold out. What was really annoying about this is, in the 1988 presidential election, the president, Carlos Andres Perez, had called the IMF a neutron bomb that killed people but left buildings standing. And he said that World Bank economists were genocide workers in the pay of economic totalitarianism. So this guy had basically done the mother of all flip-flops and sold the country down the river to the International Monetary Fund. He sold the country to the Rothschilds, effectively. This is what he did. Chavez wasn't having any of it and attempted to overthrow the guy in 1992. I'm sure you know all about it. You can look it up and see what happened. Right, the country was on its arse. The cost of petrol and oil to consumers within Venezuela gone through the roof in a country that had massive oil wealth. Right? This is why we had the failed coup attempt by Chavez in 1992. So he came out of prison, formed a political party, and he won the presidency in 1998. You will remember the US backed a failed coup attempt against Chavez in 2002. The US failed to get rid of him. And what happened after that was truly and utterly historic. So what happened after that? What happened in the period after the failed coup against Chavez up until the present day? Well, and again, we're dealing with facts here. We're not dealing with the opinion of this researcher, I should say this broadcaster. This is fact. What he did was, Chavez, was he nationalized key industries in Venezuela. And he created something called participatory democratic communal councils. And he put in those social programs that I talked about a few minutes ago, these Bolivarian programs. Venezuela was getting massive oil profits, profits that used to go to Wall Street companies. He started investing these profits in the state and in the poorest areas of the country. This is all true, which saw massive, I can't say it enough, improvements in poverty, in getting people out of poverty, literacy, income equality and quality of life. So he was a massive thorn in the side of the World Bank and the IMF. He was a genius. In my opinion, one of the greatest men that ever lived. In my opinion. So I'm summarising here. It's a bit of a Cliff Notes version of events, isn't it? But it's all true. So as well as doing this, as well as nationalising and kicking out the cartels, the IMF-controlled cartels, as well as doing that, well, he went even further than they ever expected. He started to befriend Morales in Bolivia and Correa in Ecuador, Ortega in Nicaragua. Alliances were being formed by these people against Rothschild-controlled US corporate imperialism. He was uniting the continent, Chavez. Not in a kind of an EU-type way. There was no political union going to come out of this with a single government dictating to the entire continent what went and what didn't went, or what didn't go, right? There was none of that. It wasn't going to be a tyrannical political union. These countries would remain independent and would be totally sovereign and break the shackles of the IMF and the World Bank. The Rothschilds. But they would cooperate in a way that would benefit the, dare I say it, the proletariat. I put that in because if I keep this going, I'm going to say comrade at some stage, right? There are going to be people listening to this program. We're not going to like this, but I don't care. This is how I see it, and this is the truth. I'm not going to start using words like comrade. So Chavez was a vehement anti-Zionist, of course, and for years he was labelled anti-Semitic because that's what these people do when their hegemony is threatened. He's an anti-Semite, of course, eh? So basically what happened, under the privatisations mandated by the International Monetary Fund and carried out by Chavez's predecessor, life in Venezuela was unlivable during the 1990s. Garbage couldn't be collected. Electricity would go off for weeks and weeks and weeks because private companies with their head offices in the US ran electricity supply in these countries and would switch off the power. The country was a corporatocracy. It was owned wholesale by some of the biggest corporations in the world. Chavez said no more. No fricking, as David would say, more. It's going to stop. No more Venezuelan oil profits going to Wall Street corporations. No way. They would be invested in the people of Venezuela. You see, they couldn't buy this guy. Several times after Chavez came to power in 1998, they attempted to buy this guy. This guy must want what everybody else wants. Riches, money, title, power, castles, properties overseas. No. Chavez invested the now nationalized state oil resources in the people of Venezuela. Millions of people came out of poverty, all through, and wait for it. In the period between 1995 and 2009, he halved poverty and unemployment in Venezuela. That is the truth. It's not a made-up stat. The guy was the real deal. I was thinking today, how do you describe him? I was thinking he was Tony Benn on steroids. Way beyond Tony Benn. And it's my biggest regret. I secured an interview with him in 2009, I think. Late 2009. But his English wasn't good enough for an interview. And just when we were about to do it, there was a problem with the interpreter and we couldn't do it. And he was really keen to do it. I was gutted. Tony Benn on steroids. So he died of cancer. I believe he was murdered. He said that he was, you know, that they had induced the illness in him. And the current president, Nicolas Maduro, under fire today from the world's media, has continued with the Bolivarian programs. He has. So what's happened then? Why is there no food on supermarket shelves today? Why are people not getting access to medicine? What's going on? Here's what happened even 3 years ago. The Israelis and the United States got together with Saudi Arabia and told Saudi Arabia to flood the market with cheap oil, even though it was cutting its own nose off despite its own face. This is true, by the way. It's not in Saudi Arabia's interest to do that, but it did do it, and it continues to do it today, even though the Saudis are up to their necks in debt. I want you to think about that. Because when you think of Saudi Arabia and you think of Bahrain and Jordan, you think unlimited wealth, royal families, marble and gold palaces. They are up to their necks in money. No, they're not. Not the Saudis. Not the Saudis. They began to flood the market with cheap oil against their own better judgment. But the Israelis called the shots, and the neocon puppets in America joined with the Israelis in getting the Saudis to go along with it. What happened? Last year, we saw oil drop to $28 a barrel. What did I say at that time? And I can get the audio to prove it. I said on this program that even though oil has dropped to $28 a barrel, you will not see a drop in petrol prices at the pumps. I said it on this program, and I was right. Today, a barrel of crude oil is under $50. That's this morning. Disaster for oil exporters like Venezuela. Starved them of cash. And while that was going on, they had to deal with corporate sabotage, because subsidiaries of US corporations deliberately halted production of food in that country or slowed their production down to half its normal output to cause food shortages. And if you don't believe me, look up Kraft Heinz, because Kraft Heinz, a bastard of a company, were caught doing this back in 2015, deliberately creating food shortages to undermine the government. Venezuela is being strangled by the countries and corporations that Hugo Chavez had the balls to stand up to. This is true. This isn't conjecture. It is full-scale economic sabotage resulting in the exacerbated problems that we've seen in the last couple of years, but particularly in the last few months. The world's media, dutifully, because the world's media is owned by the same corporations that want to take over Venezuela again and every other square inch of property on planet Earth, with loans from, of course, the Rothschilds and the central banks, the World Bank and the IMF. The world's media dutifully calls it socialism gone mad. And as I said earlier on, that the free market trumps Marxism. You're going to hear this all day long. All day long. Is Maduro an angel? Is he blameless? It's never entirely black and white. He might be handling things maybe a bit differently. Trying to wipe out the opposition in the way that he's doing it today isn't wise, I would argue. It provides ammo for those who want to get rid of him. But he would say, would Maduro, the opposition is aligned with and is controlled from DC, which is controlled from Tel Aviv. The truth. And the opposition that you hear about today on Sky News and BBC and C-SPAN and all the rest wants to hand the country back to the IMF and the corporations, to privatise everything again and to enforce austerity on the Venezuelans in lieu of the debt it says Venezuela owes. Number of commentators on TV today saying that Venezuela owes billions. It owes hundreds and hundreds of millions or billions. What do you not get? You don't get the truth. Not reported anywhere this year was that the Colombian president, Juan Manuel Santos, met with Trump. This was in May. Juan Manuel Santos, the Colombian president, most independent media commentators never heard of him. I've heard of him. He met with Trump. It was in May. It was a couple of days they spent together. What did Santos do when he went back to Venezuela? What did he do? Excuse me, to Colombia. What did he do? He ordered his army to deploy its armoured tanks to the Venezuelan border. Another puppet. Donald Trump has met this year with key Venezuelan opposition figures, namely Julio Borges, the opposition president in the National Assembly, and with Lilian Tintori, okay, married to Leopoldo López, currently in jail for inciting violent protests in 2014. So he met with the wife of Leopoldo López. Trump is meeting with the opposition. The opposition is not genuine. It's controlled by the United States, which is in turn controlled by Israel. And as the young man said on Tucker Carlson, the murders that have taken place in recent times have been by anti-government forces or opposition forces. That's a fact. And it's also a fact that violence inside Venezuela definitely went up after Trump met not only with the Colombian president, but also with these opposition leaders in Venezuela. Why? Why? What's the upshot of it? 22 minutes to the top of the hour. Why? Because the world could not be allowed to see ever, particularly countries in the developing world, they could never be allowed to see what happens when economies are not managed by the IMF, the World Bank, the Rothschilds. We could not be allowed to see the success of a country not controlled by them and by their proxies. They couldn't allow the Bolivarian Revolution to succeed. So they've starved the country of cash to create the chaos and the disorder we have seen, and they have bought and paid for the opposition in the country. The media goes without saying. The media has always been on side. They've surrounded Venezuela now with their puppets, like the Colombian puppet Muppet I just spoke of there. And South American media, which is owned by the same corporations as the corporations which own the media here in this country, denounce on a daily basis, denounce Maduro as a dictator who is enslaving his people, when nothing could be further from the truth. This is one of the biggest stories in the media in 2017. Nobody's covering it. I'm going to take a wee break. Back with more in a minute. This is your Richie Allen Show, Sunday View for July 30th, 2017. I did go on a bit there, but I think it's vitally important. Back in a minute.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete. The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer, designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Sign up today. Email Sue on nassusproductions@gmail.com.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Manchester's Tiger Lounge roars for the last time ever, Saturday the 5th of August. Legendary DJ Mark Reeder, collaborator with New Order, Depeche Mode and the Pet Shop Boys, playing timeless electro dance classics and exclusive remixes. And for the new sound of Manchester, it's Modern Family Unit, taken to the stage replete with President Gas, dancers and a 6-foot rabbit. Dance away, the last show at the Tiger Lounge, 7:30 till 11 o'clock, Saturday the 5th of August. Tickets at skiddle.com.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you heard of the potential healing power of CBD and non-psychoactive strain from cannabis? At Indoka, our mission is to show everyone how incredible CBD is. Each month, you can win $1,000 worth of our CBD products, plus everyone who enters will receive a beginner's guide to CBD cannabidiol. Our products are 100% organic, lab-tested and legal. For your chances of winning and special discounts on our range of CBD products, just visit offers.indoka.com/Richie Allen. That's offers.endoca.com/Richie Allen. Indoka, unlocking the secrets of nature.
Welcome back to the programme. It's 11:42 as I record this, so 18 minutes at the top of the hour. This is Richie Allen with you on Sunday View until basically just before the top of the hour. We're live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 and TuneIn Radio. I stand by what I said, it's the biggest story of the year. What we've seen in that country over the time period that I described is we've seen what happens when you're not dealing with phony socialists and phony Marxists like Jeremy Corbyn, who's a phony, John McDonnell, who's a phony. When you get a guy in there like Correa, Morales, Chavez, and they do that which they said they were going to do, which is to nationalise everything in the country, to take the country's sovereignty back, kick out the cartels, and invest the money coming in into the social programs that Chavez invested it into. You see what can happen. You see what can happen in a country. And how things can work for the greater good, for the betterment of everybody. And Chavez, I believe, was one of the greatest threats to the Rothschild controlled cartel that the world has ever known. And if it was to continue, and the prosperity and the peace and the happiness and the thriving of that country had continued, what would it say to people, as I said, in the developing economies, in the developing world? Massive story. And we'll move on. I'm just going to briefly run through the papers. We're entering what's commonly known, and my fellow journalist friends will know, as the silly season. So that's no bad thing for the likes of our programme, but you get a lot of repetition in the papers. The Sunday Observer leads with the headline, Republican fears mount after Trump's White House call. I'm sure you've been hearing about this. The Observer says that Trump's presidency is facing fresh turmoil after a week of unadulterated disasters. that culminated in the removal of his chief of staff, Rens Priebus. I think David summed this up, the chaos president. It's just crazy stuff, you know. It's chaos everywhere you look, as David has said, and it's for so many different reasons. One of the reasons, of course, I believe, is to create the sort of television-type drama that we see on, you know, when we watch Netflix or when we watch Fox. That's what it is. You know, it's just an ongoing soap opera. That's the Sunday Observer. Now, the Sunday Telegraph headline is Boris Alloy attacks Hammond Brexit plan. What does that mean? Well, it says that Johnson's economic friend, Gerard Lyons, has criticised Philip Hammond's Brexit transition plan. Writing for the Sunday Telegraph today, Lyons says any transition should only be 2 years long, a year shorter than outlined by Hammond. Hammond is proposing a 3-year transition period after the 2 years. Do you understand that? So the 3-year transition would begin in 2019. We wouldn't be out of the European Union. I'm going to tell you more about that in a minute. Sunday Times revealed life of teenage brides in ISIS Little Britain. This is unbelievable. It's about teenage girls who run away to marry ISIS fighters. So it's a big expose of this. The paper says more than 150 jihadists and other criminals have been stripped of their citizenship and banned from returning to the UK amid fears that when ISIS eventually collapse, it will lead to an influx of militants from Syria. That's the plan. The Sunday Mail, don't show Diana Love tapes on TV, pleads her brother Earl Spencer. Not going to get into that. I think you know about that. Sunday Express, Diana, I begged the Queen for help in vain. It's the Sunday Express, they love Diana. The Star on Sunday, Queen could have saved Diana. Front page, the Sunday Mirror, Ant in jungle comeback. That's important. The Sunday People, why I'll never forgive myself, Kerry Katona. That's important as well. So you see where all of this is going. So on the Brexit thing then. Unregulated free movement of people after Brexit would not keep faith with or honour the referendum result, according to Liam Fox, the International Trade Secretary. Now, he was interviewed by the Sunday Times. He said, Fox did, that he hadn't been party to widely reported talks about a transitional period when free movement would be retained. We would keep free movement after 2019. Hammond, the Chancellor, has said it will be some time before full migration controls can be introduced. Fox said border controls were a key element of the Brexit referendum. And he said unregulated free movement would seem to me not to be keeping faith with that decision. He's right, of course. Sky News are all over this. Here is Sarah Hajibegiri. This is Sarah Hajibegiri on Sky News with this story.
Now, this fresh debate is all about free movement of people, that controversial cornerstone of EU membership. Now, we understand from 48 hours ago, Philip Hammond said, we're going to need to have a transitional period for up to 3 years where many of the arrangements after we leave the EU remain the same. So that means things like migration controls will not be in place for several years after we leave the European Union. And he said that there was broad acceptance for this from the Cabinet. Now, it seems that wasn't strictly true. Trade Secretary, International Trade Secretary Liam Fox has said that he wasn't part of these discussions and that he certainly has not signed up to free movement of people continuing. He's speaking to the Sunday Times. He said, we made it clear that control of our own borders was one of the elements we wanted in the referendum, and unregulated free movement would seem to me not to keep faith with that decision. I'm very happy to discuss whatever transitional arrangements and whatever implementation agreement we might want. But that has to be an agreement by the Cabinet. It can't just be made by an individual or any group within the Cabinet. Of course, there has been criticism for the Chancellor. There's speculation, of course, as well, because the Prime Minister is away on holiday at the moment, and the timing of these comments that he made, that perhaps he was trying to manoeuvre some sort of political advantage whilst the Prime Minister was away. But clearly, there isn't the unity on this issue within Cabinet. Also, some speculation and suggestions in the paper that potentially Boris Johnson, the Foreign Secretary, is also unhappy about the length of period of time for that transitional period. 3 years, the suggestion being that was rather excessive and that this could all be wrapped up in 2 years.
it could be wrapped up in a day. And I think I've made that comment, I've made that claim several times. It could be wrapped up in a day. Funnily enough, Gerard Batten is a UKIP MEP. And in a conversation with RT, he makes the same claim that there's no need for any negotiations, really. This could all be wrapped up. But he also says, does Gerard Batten, that Brexit is being betrayed, and it is being betrayed. Here he is.
Well, I think that there's always been a great danger that Brexit would be betrayed, because we know that only a minority of members of both houses of Parliament actually want to implement the decision of the referendum. And if they were really serious about leaving, they would have started this process 12 months ago, not waited for a full year before doing anything, and nothing much is going to happen for another 2 years. Immigration is the thing that they should, priority number one, to take control of our borders and actually have an immigration policy so that we control who comes in, who can come in and settle and work and study or whatever, rather than the idiotic system we have now, which is that anybody can turn up from the European Union, but it's extremely difficult for qualified people from outside of the European Union to actually come in and work and contribute to our economy. So we need to seize control of that immediately, and the government doesn't seem to have a clue about what it's actually doing.
Well, we can't seize control immediately because we haven't left, have we? And, of course, there are so many...
But we could leave tomorrow. All we've got to do is leave, is repeal the 1972 European Communities Act, say to the European Union, well, we just left under our law, and now we're going to tell you how it's going to work. The EU has absolutely no incentive whatsoever to reach any agreement with us, and they have every incentive to delay and impede this for as long as possible in the hope that we actually give up and don't leave in the end. And that's their strategy.
It is their strategy. We've been saying it all along. None of them want to leave. It's a sham. None of them really wants to leave the European Union. You know, that's how I see it anyway. UKIP were hugely successful in getting the announcement of the referendum, in lobbying for the referendum, in becoming as popular as they did, and Farage, who I think, and I have no truck with any party, but whatever Farage has become now, and it's a bit, to be honest with you, it's a bit unsavoury seeing Farage presenting programmes for LBC and becoming this caricature now of what he used to be. Farage always believed what he said about the dictatorship of Brussels, what it meant long term for people and for industry and for employment and for sovereignty. None of them want to leave. It's a sham. It's an utter sham. We've had a lot of comment on Twitter about what I said about Venezuela. Mark tweets, the EU gave Greece the same treatment Venezuela is getting from the US at the moment. Starve them, confuse them, divide them, own them, says Mark. Number of you referring to Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins, which is very good because it details John's own time as a puppet of these financial institutions in Latin America, doing deals with dictators to take massive loans from these financial behemoths in order to get these countries into debt, in order that you could steal every natural asset, every state asset in the country. That's the way they've done this for generations. That's what Chavez put a stop to, basically, you know. It's as simple as that. Good morning, Spirit Sam, but good morning, Fluffles, on Twitter. Good morning, Deborah, who said, I've been waiting for you to talk about Venezuela. It's often come up, Deborah. I've often, over the years in programmes, talked about Venezuela. I've always been, you know, a supporter of what Chavez did and what you know, his legacy, and what Maduro has tried to do, which is to take it on and take it further, you know. Hi to Brian as well, who says, Richie, if Venezuela were to start trading into gold-backed yen, would prosperity go back to the people and get rid of the US dollar? I don't know. I couldn't say that. I couldn't endorse that. I just don't know is the answer. Number of you very interested in this. GP Brown saw a documentary on Venezuela recently. Not surprising. We are being lied to. America want regime change again. It's, you're right, but it's much, much bigger than regime change there. Hi to Jackie and Kim in Oz. Good evening, Jackie and Kim. How are you? Finally getting to listen to you live. Must be late in the... Or is it probably the mid-evening? Is it the mid-evening 10 or 11 o'clock at night there, depending on where you are. Nice to hear from you as well. And you know the free movement of people thing and the resistance to stopping that. It's ultimately to dilute sovereignty and to take away any sense of nationalism. Some ugly things come out of nationalism, of course they do. The English Defence League, Zionism. These are ugly racist ideologies. You do get ugly people who wear the flag of nationalism. But fundamentally, nationalism is a great thing. You know, the idea that the fruits of the country, that the country is there to support everybody. That's not socialism. Nationalism, at its core, is that the country belongs to everybody. You know, and we manufacture, we manage the resources of the country for the betterment of everybody else. And we don't allow external influences come into our country, corrupt our politicians in a way that our politicians then sell our country out to them. Like my country has been sold to the International Monetary Fund and the European Union and the European Central Bank, which is commonly known as the Troika. This is what free movement of people is designed to do. Designed to stop us becoming self-aware. Well, this is ours. This is ours. They can't sell the flipping forest trees. They can't sell that. That's ours. How can they sell that to a corporation? How can they do that to a corporation based in Texas or a corporation based in Tel Aviv or Jerusalem or Timbuktu? How can they do that? That's not right. We use the forest sustainably for the betterment of everybody in the country. But you talk like that, you're called a socialist, a mad socialist, you're crazy. The free market will sort it all out. Privatise everything, everybody will be fine. It's not about that. It's about condemning you to never-ending struggle, which gets worse and worse and worse and worse until you just go away, you expire, you cease to be. You don't exist anymore. You've been priced out of life. That's where it's all going. Venezuela is a massive, it's the front line, basically. That's what I couldn't think of a minute ago. It is the front line of people genuinely opposing this tyranny. This is the front line. This is where it's going on right now. Not in England, because elbow patches, tweed jacket wearing Jeremy Corbyn, he's no Hugo Chavez. Don't believe it for a minute. Oh, Richie here. He's talking about nationalising the railways. Believe it for a minute. Don't believe it for a minute. So it's happening in Venezuela right now. It's like the Empire Strikes Back. The Chavez years were Star Wars. That's the analogy. Now it's the Empire Strikes Back. Start a revolution in Venezuela. Kill people. Use the media to describe. We've heard it all before. He's a tyrant. He's a dictator. He's a madman. He's starving his own people. They've been starved by the Saudis and the Israelis driving the price of oil down into the ground. As I said earlier on, against what's good for Saudi Arabia. But we don't have a media who will even bring on somebody who understands this. A historian, for example, who will tell you what's really going on. When they do it, they bring on young Dakota Lilly on Sky News, who, probably brighter than me, inexperienced, can't explain it, gets muddled in a debate about whether the elections were genuine or not. Let's talk about the millions and millions of people taken out of poverty by Chavez. You know? My friend Jean Ann is saying the reason Venezuela should be of interest to people is to do it when and not if the next crash comes in the West. Because it's sort of all headed, if they get their way. It's exactly where it's headed. It's exactly where it's headed. So watch it closely, Venezuela. And I'm going to leave you and love you. That's it for this edition of the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com Sunday View. Thank you so much for tuning in. Bit of a disjointed program today, but I wanted to speak a lot about Venezuela today. You look after yourselves and one another. Got some terrific programs lined up for you in the next couple of days. Pippa King amongst the guests tomorrow The lovely Pippa King, great woman, joins me tomorrow. And I'll tell you more about the week when I speak with you tomorrow at 7 p.m. British Summer Time. Big thanks to you for listening. Stay with davidicke.com/headlines and Fab Radio 2 as well. Bye now. Bye.